all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, better late than never anyway. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, December 9th. Nice to have you along. Busy show today. So busy getting ready for it. I almost didn't make it here. Let's see. Kiev Akil will be joining us. Courier Newsroom national correspondent, because of course we've reached finally the end of the midterm cycle. So we will also talk about that with Courier Newsroom political director Carolyn Fidler. We'll talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. Also our guest sportscaster, UW-Eau Claire athletic director Dan Schumacher. That's all coming up today. On Monday, we'll have State Senator Kel DeRoys, the newest member of the Joint Finance Committee. To reach us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com is the email address. The phone number is 715-388-7155. Would love to hear from you this morning. And, of course, we have Aaron Zommers in the chair with us here. Aaron, good morning to you.
Good morning. I was actually here early today because I left maybe 10 minutes early or got out of bed 10 minutes early to account for the weather. And I went outside and I just looked around and I'm like, some snowstorm, huh? Well, good problem to have. And just got here early.
Well, it's coming, I guess, right? I'm just pulling up the radar right now because now, of course, now I'm curious because it does have a it's really busy south of you. Looks like Rockford's getting hammered by a thunderstorm or something. Holy cow.
Looks like I was just lucky enough to get here unimpeded.
Well, it does look like you were, because I mean, it is going to rain rain to the south and snow all across southwestern Wisconsin, it looks like here. So pay attention to the local forecast, pay attention to the roads, and be careful out there, everybody. I guess I should explain what's got me a little discombobulated here. And I saw it on one of the news wires first, and I see it just crossed another one. And those of you of a progressive or democratic persuasion, I'm going to take a sip of coffee. Then you better take one too, because after I tell you this, you're going to want to do a spit take and you don't want to make a mess. So hang on a second here. All right. Brace yourselves. Remember how Democrats fought so hard to get 50-50 2 years ago, only to be foiled? Remember how hard Democrats fought this year to get 51 seats? Because the thought was maybe then Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema wouldn't be such a pain in the arse. Pain in the arse, Kyrsten Sinema announced this morning she is leaving the Democratic Party and is registering as an independent, denying Democrats a clean 51-seat majority. In remarks that were published about an hour ago, she says that she views the Arizona Democratic Party as extreme as the state Republican Party. I'm going to say that again. She believes activists in the Arizona Democratic Party are as extreme as the state Republican Party. Sinema says in an op-ed that was just published by the Arizona Republic, Arizonans, including many registered as Democrats or Republicans, are eager for leaders who focus on common sense solutions rather than party doctrine. That's why I have joined the growing number of Arizonans who reject party politics by declaring my independence from the broken partisan system in Washington. Sinema, ever unpredictable and inscrutable, according to Axios, told Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of her decision yesterday, according to Politico. Sinema also told CNN's Jake Tapper, I know some people might be a little bit surprised by this, but actually I think it makes a lot of sense. I've never fit neatly into any party box. I've never really tried. I don't want to. Removing myself from the partisan structure, not only is it true to who I am and how I operate, I also think it'll provide a place of belonging for many folks across the state and the country who are also tired of the partisanship. No, it's not. They're a lot less tired of the partisanship than they are of selfish characters who always look for any way, shape, or form to gum up the works of having democracy and government work smoothly, that there's always got to be somebody that wants to put the spotlight on themselves. Somebody who wants to have outsized influence, which Joe Manchin will have again now as well. I guess it's not the world's biggest surprise. I mean, you had Manchin and Sinema, you know, being a pill. And if the two of them ever did things together, of course, with Republicans, they could, again, muck everything up. So, again, while it's not a huge surprise, it is the fact that Kyrsten Sinema is engaged in what I would call more me now kind of politics that makes for, you know, a very not great way to wrap up a week, where once again, people worked their hearts out in Georgia to get two seats, get those won 2 years ago, hold on to one of them this year that was up again, only to find that somebody who branded themselves as a Democrat or progressive, whether it was Kyrsten Sinema or Joe Manchin, has once again decided that, you know, they're going to do their own thing, whatever that own thing is. And here's what the own thing is. It's doing nothing but looking out for themselves. That's all it's ever been. If you're a Democrat, you know how you're going to vote for things that are good for the economy or good for the planet. But Manchin and Sinema always put themselves first and got in the way of anything. There was never a real attempt at bipartisan solutions. And that's only going to continue now with today's news. Back with the Badger volleyball win after this. This is Up North News Radio. Going on this day in music history, so I think some of it just had to naturally spill over, and that of course was the Beach Boys with Little Saint Nick. And if I'd have been smart enough to scroll down a little further, I would have found out what year that was released. 1963. That's right, December 9th, 1963, the Beach Boys release Little Saint Nick. The Wisconsin Badgers are dancing still. Penn State took the Badgers all the way to a fifth set, but the Wisconsin women dominated in that final game and advanced to the regional finals with a 3-2 win over the Nittany Lions. For the defending national champions, this is the eighth year in a row the Badgers have reached the Elite Eight, and they are undefeated at home this season, 16-0 in the Fieldhouse. The story of the game was blocks. You know, when any of us play volleyball, you always like to think you can block, and every so often you get in a good one, but much of the time your arms are separated as the ball goes through them, like Abraham Lincoln splitting logs or something. You watch this, and these women are brick walls at stopping these things. Well, I mean, the best of the teams are, and the Badgers certainly were. 23 blocks to 9 for the Badgers over Penn State. So now the Badgers will take on that other team from Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, which defeated Florida 3-1 in the Fieldhouse last night. So in the regional finals for a chance at the Final Four, it will be the Badgers against Pittsburgh. UW and Pitt squaring off tomorrow, Saturday evening, 7 p.m. at the Fieldhouse in Madison. The game will be on ESPNU. Which, near as I can tell, is pretty much on most. If you've got a system with, you know, ESPN and ESPN2, chances are really good, I think, at this point that ESPNU is on there. So if it's not something you normally watch, you probably will be able to find the channel. Marquette played earlier in the day down in Texas. They were eliminated by the University of Texas 3-1. Texas will advance and face Ohio State, who eliminated the Minnesota Gophers down there in Austin on Thursday. So it's kind of a shame. You've got these four great Big Ten teams, and yet they were matched up against each other in both cases in regional semifinals, which I suppose is one way to make sure that you don't have a Final Four that's all Big Ten teams. But if it worked out that way, you know, it would have worked out that way. The Milwaukee Bucks play tonight. They are at Dallas It is a 9 o'clock start time tonight, and that game is on ESPN. The Badger men's basketball team, they are now 6-2. They play next on Sunday at Iowa. 5:30 is the tip off, and that's on the Big Ten Network. This is the bye weekend for the Packers, so you actually have a Sunday, Monday, whatever, you know, to yourself. Usually the bye weekend, I think of it as like an October thing, and that's always been when you get like a whole ton of yard work done, or maybe it's when you go on that fall colors or canoe trip or what have you. I wonder if this isn't the latest the bye week has ever been for the Packers. And, well, I guess it's Christmas shopping will be the theme for the bye week. Rams defeated the Raiders in Thursday Night Football last night, 17-16. All right, let's talk about the Brittany Griner situation, the WNBA superstar who was surprisingly abruptly released by Russia after, what, some 300 days of kidnapping her. You know, state-sponsored kidnapping is the only fair way to really describe it. And it turned out that the Russians did eventually agree to a prisoner swap. And so overnight, Brittany Griner landed back on U.S. soil, landing in San Antonio, Texas, at Kelly Field, after being detained for all of that time, some 10 months. Her status as an openly gay Black woman, her prominence in women's basketball, and her imprisonment in a country where authorities have been hostile to the LGBTQ community only heightened concerns for her. It brought tremendous attention to the case, and Griner was eventually exchanged for a notorious arms dealer, Victor Bout, but it did achieve a goal for Biden to get Griner home. Unfortunately, the Russians would not budge and release another American, Paul Whelan, who's been jailed there for nearly 4 years. And so here's a little bit of Brittany Griner talking about being released and coming home.
She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along. We never forgot about Brittany. We've not forgotten about Paul Whelan, who's been unjustly detained in Russia for years. This was not a choice of which American to bring home. We brought home Trevor Reed when we had a chance early this year. Sadly, for totally illegitimate reasons, Russia is treating Paul's case differently than Brittany's. And while we have not yet succeeded in securing Paul's release, we are not giving up. We will never give up. We remain in close touch with Paul's family, the Whelan family, and my thoughts and prayers are with them today. They have to have such mixed emotions today. And we'll keep negotiating in good faith for Paul's release. I guarantee that.
That was President Biden actually talking about Brittany Griner's release. Unfortunately, because the Russians would not give way on releasing Paul Whelan, it unleashed, again, just some of the ugliest sides of this country, some of the ugliest, most divisive sectors. For example, this garbage comment from a radio talk show host in the Milwaukee area said that, you know, said this about Biden talking up getting Brittany Griner released. Jay Weber writes, "She's a Black, lesbian, America-hating liberal, and he couldn't wait to tell his base." I mean, he really just couldn't help but slip all those in, could he? Using labels on her. Thankfully, others were reminding us that Paul Whelan was detained by Russia in 2018 during the Trump administration. And as much as Trump, had himself attached to the rear quarters of a Russian dictator, he did not get Whelan home. And it's clear that many on the right are simply using Paul Whelan's name to denigrate Griner, which is disrespectful to all of them. And have we mentioned that Trump worked out a deal with the Taliban that freed some 5,000 prisoners? If all you can do is attack without looking back and seeing if you're living in a glass house of your own, you deserve every bit of scorn that you get. It is entirely possible and right to be happy that Brittany Griner is coming home, to be happy that any American unlawfully detained, kidnapped someplace is coming home without having to try to score political points about it, especially by using her race or her sexual identity as some reason to try to, again, make things even more divisive, to try to say that, whatever it is that you're trying to say, it's ugly and it's just stupid. Just stop it. But that's what we had to deal with yesterday. While we should have been happy just at the resolution of one case, and we will continue working on another. Turning to some happier news here in Wisconsin, there's an increasing signs that high-speed rail may yet come to Wisconsin in our lifetimes, even though it is significantly overdue. How do I know it's getting closer? Because Scott Walker tweeted yesterday about news stories about high-speed rail in Wisconsin, and he tweeted, "This is a stupid idea." Those were the words from Scott Walker, which tells you right away, we're on to something here. The guy who turned away $800 million and God knows how many jobs and the economic development that would have come along the line, the guy who gave us Foxconn instead. If he says something is a stupid idea, then just imagine yourself in opposite world, because that's where it is in Scott Walker's political lexicon. And so, yes, because of the bipartisan infrastructure law, there is a push toward beefing up passenger rail service between cities. Now, that's not quite the same thing as a national high-speed rail network, which, again, is long overdue in this country. So we're not talking about a rail line from Chicago to the Twin Cities, for example. But we are talking about the next step, which would be Milwaukee to Madison. Currently, the trains that leave Milwaukee go up through Columbus, Watertown, and work their way to La Crosse and then up the river. Don't come through Madison. You have to go to, where are the stations now? Wisconsin Dells, La Crosse, things like that. Anyway, if it looks like through the bipartisan infrastructure law, passenger rail is going to be beefed up between Milwaukee and Madison, then the talk becomes of where to put the station in Madison. And we're on a statewide show like this, we're not going to get, deep into the weeds as far as what part of Madison it should go into. And there's a case to be made for multiple sites around the city. But if it can get done, and if that can be improved, and brought to Madison, that is going to do so much to alleviate the traffic congestion on 94 between Madison and Milwaukee. It's going to allow so many people to get more things done while they're sitting in a rail car than sitting in traffic, being unable to be productive. And I make sure to point this out because we already have passenger rail traffic on a regular basis between Chicago and Milwaukee. Now this is talk about extending the Hiawatha from Milwaukee to Madison. Again, great to take that traffic off I-94, but you know what the other busiest section of I-94 is? The section between Eau Claire and Hudson. A lot of folks in western Wisconsin who commute to the Twin Cities and make a long drive. And again, those communities could reap the benefits of a passenger rail line from Eau Claire to the Twin Cities. I've been part of news stories as a reporter, advocacy as a legislator for that corridor for 25 plus years now. And it would be so great to have that happen. Ideally, in my mind, a Chicago to Twin Cities route would basically follow I-94 and go up through Eau Claire. There is a case being made to follow the current Amtrak line up through La Crosse and along the river and then up through the South Metro of the Twin Cities. Again, I understand the support for it, and perhaps you look at splitting that line so that one train goes through Eau Claire and then the other train goes through La Crosse. Regardless, it's been a long time since the days of the 400. The old passenger train that was called that because it would make the run from Chicago to St. Paul in 400 minutes and helped the entire economy of the Midwest as people could move back and forth. We got away from that. We got away from trolley service, We just got away from rails entirely in our national embrace of the cult of the car. We are moving bit by bit toward a more well-rounded transportation system. It's good for the environment. It's good for the economy. It's good for people. It's good for commuters. And if Scott Walker says it's stupid, well then, kids, that just seals the deal. Let's take a break. We'll have more on Up North News Radio coming up in just a bit.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It's Friday, 6:33 now here on beautiful Lake Wissota. You see what I didn't do there, Aaron? I didn't paste the This Day in History into my usual show notes. That's what threw me off over here. I tell you what, you get caught up in that volleyball match and suddenly you forget to prep for your show the next day. It is Friday the 9th. There it is. We Didn't Start the Fire began a two-week run in the number one position on the U.S. singles chart this day in 1989. With We Didn't Start the Fire. And you're saying, why are you saying these musical things now? Well, because Carolyn Fiddler is going to be here at 6:50, and we need to go over some of the political news of the day as well. So we may not get quite as much time to tell you things like, you know, Dick Butkus is 80 years old today, or that Imogen Heap is 45, or Imogen.
I believe
here's
Imogen.
Where the old guy asks the young guy, who you've put on my birthday list here.
It is Imogen Heap. She's a musician known for, now I can't even think of the song name. See, I should have put that on there too.
Well, it's okay. You can. We've also got seek. Frank Wright. What's that?
Hide and Seek. That's what it is. It's with originally okay. Like the, what you say, like that's sampled from in a bunch of other songs. It's originally from that.
Gotcha. Okay. And Frank Wright III, AKA Tree Cool.
Trey Cool.
I got that right? Trey Cool. See, if you're like French, you got to put an S at the end of that. But anyway, drummer of Green Day is 50 years old today as well. So wanted to pass along a few of those notes ahead of time before Ms. Fiddler joins us. All right. We wanted to take a little time here to talk about the week that was in Congress, because something very good happened and some very annoying things happened. And I don't know that this will be a regular feature, but I think there are some Fridays where we should look back at the week in Congress and maybe give a report card, if you will, to our congressional delegation as far as, you know, things that they did or didn't do or said. For example, you'd have Ron Johnson picking up right where he left off, getting an F as a failure for getting any productive work done, and instead using the week to, again, you know, spread rumors and lies about the COVID vaccine and launch, you know, some kind of an investigation into it. And for also saying that he was going to be helping House Republicans in their many investigations about crises, both real and imagined. So while he's not in the majority in the Senate, he won't be bored, because he'll have his Republican buddies in the House who probably will look at him like, you know, a tag along, like, oh, Ron Johnson wants to play with us again. It's tough being in the minority. Okay, let him help us out. Along those crises, both real and imagined, we're going to have to watch very carefully this new committee that Republicans claim they're going to create, that Green Bay Republican Mike Gallagher is going to chair. It's being referred to as the House Select Committee on China. That's right, an entire House committee dedicated to one country. And it's going to, again, sound like they're saying all the right things in the beginning, because, again, China is a substantial violator of human rights. China is not good for, you know, the planet's resources. China is hostile in military ways. China is also a huge trading partner responsible for a chunk of the U.S. economy because of the way we have outsourced our manufacturing over the decades. And we have one administration. But if you have a congressional committee and a Republican majority in the House that is dedicated to undermining that Democratic president and that Democratic administration and that administration's efforts to try to do our best with China, well, then we're going to have trouble. And that's what we're going to have to look for most. Is this Select China Committee something that Mike Gallagher is going to use responsibly to work with the administration to have a strong national front in exposing China's shortcomings and making sure that China can't cover up certain things? In other words, will the committee be directing their ire at China, or will the committee be simply trying to undercut the Biden administration using China as a convenient excuse? Because again, at some point, things have to get done. Things have to get either negotiated, or threats have to be proven to be not a bluff. And again, there's only one administration at a time that can do something like that. But Gallagher has been, much like Tom Tiffany, they spend so much time railing against China and railing against immigrants from Central America and Mexico that one would wonder if there's anything that they work on back home, or if they simply have found the most convenient path to re-election is to denigrate people who aren't like them and rile up their base and win election that way. This China committee might be all fine and good, but again, what does it do for the constituents in Brown County or any place else for that matter? If you can't connect the dots and show you're doing anything other than just trying to undercut a president and appeal to your base, what good is it really doing us? So that's what we're going to look for when Mike Gallagher chairs this special committee on China. Now let's talk about Tammy Baldwin's week, which was a great week, a very historic week. There's an Associated Press story that starts with talking about how Tammy Baldwin was standing on the Senate floor one July afternoon. Her mind was on the other side of the Capitol. The House was voting back in July on Democratic legislation to protect same-sex and interracial marriages in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn the federal right to an abortion. And Tammy Baldwin was noticing something. The bill was winning more Republican votes than she had expected. Baldwin says in this story she was overjoyed as she saw the votes coming in and excitedly walked over to Ohio Republican Senator Rob Portman, who had been one of the first Republican senators to come out in favor of same-sex marriage. The two of them immediately got to work, along with Susan Collins of Maine, the aforementioned Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, see if they couldn't find enough Republican votes in the Senate now to overcome a filibuster. It was a months-long effort, building on a decades-long push in which they implored their colleagues, they tweaked the bill to make it more appealing, they added extra language to protect religious liberties, and in the end, as we told you a week or two ago, that bill was able to pass. It had to wait for a while because some Republicans were outwardly skeptical that they thought this was a show vote, a gotcha vote meant to trap Republicans during an election season. And so this article says that as difficult as it was, you know, it was Tammy Baldwin who went to Chuck Schumer and said, let's hold off on this until after the election, and that will make it easier to get some of these final Republican votes. And they did. They got 12 Republican votes. Keep in mind, if you were paying attention over the summer, Ron Johnson was not one of them. He lied to reporters over the summer, admitted so later, saying he just wanted to get the reporters off his back when he said, well, I see no reason why I would oppose it, when in fact he was going to oppose it all along. He did. It got the votes anyway. And but not before the right-wing Heritage Foundation announced a more than $1 million ad campaign against it, with the message, liberals are hurrying to cram in their far-left agenda, and a few Republican senators are helping them. But the supporters held firm. The bill did pass out of the Senate, and now has passed the House for a second time with those amendments to protect religious liberties, and is on its way to President Biden's desk for a signature. As the roll was called last week, Tammy Baldwin teared up, hugging Schumer and others. According to the Associated Press, she said, "The thing that gets me so choked up is all the times somebody comes up and says, this matters to me." Looking back on her four decades of advocacy, after being elected to local office in the mid-1980s, after she'd already come out as gay, she said she always thought she would live long enough to see marriage equality. She said, "I'm not surprised that we won in the courts, but protecting it in the legislative body is a big deal." Now, interestingly, again, there were some Republican votes in the House back in July when that bill passed, including Republican Brian Stile of Wisconsin. And in the final vote, it picked up another Wisconsin Republican vote, Mike Gallagher. But voting no to marriage equality both times were Wisconsin's other Republicans, Tom Tiffany, Glenn Grothman, and Scott Fitzgerald. We don't really have a lot to say about, you know, their week in Congress, not really any grades to say. Fitzgerald continues to lie low, hoping people will stop talking about his participation in Trump's coup plot and playing his role in the fake electors and the fraudulent ballot that Ron Johnson nearly delivered on January 6th. Mark Pocan, meanwhile, put out a statement noting that as he cast his vote for the Respect for Marriage Act, he was thinking of his husband, Phil, and the countless other Americans in same-sex and interracial marriages. It was a great day for Mark Pocan and for Tammy Baldwin, and they deserve every bit of the accolades that they are getting. Because, again, they decided this wasn't going to be another show vote. This wasn't going to be another, you know, campaign tactic. When Midwesterners are at their best in politics, it's when they say, you know, let's just get something done. Let's just do the work. And that's really what this was about Tammy Baldwin saying, let's actually get the work done. And noting, paying attention, that when she saw a few extra votes in the House from Republicans, a few more than expected, that there was an opportunity. You don't just say, oh, well, that looks good. Maybe we'll get some more the next time. No, she saw the opportunity and she went for it. And as a result of all the other good things that have already been accomplished during the Biden administration, like, you know, saving the economy and the bipartisan infrastructure law, which will bring more passenger rail to Wisconsin, the American Rescue Plan and everything else, you now have this, the codifying of marriage equality before Clarence Thomas, himself in an interracial marriage, can undermine it. And so, again, congratulations to Tammy Baldwin. In the couple of minutes before the break here, I want to tell you what's over at upnorthnewswi.com on our website. And I, as I always say, don't forget the WI. It's upnorthnewswi.com, upnorthnewswi, if you're searching for us on social media. Now, being from the western side of the state, I did not have a lifelong base of knowledge about the Kringle. But once you marry a girl from eastern Wisconsin and spend more time over there, you understand that it's a big deal. And that was my first thought, was this is a big deal. This is a great big donut, or this is a great big Danish, you know, formed as a circle. And then you have it and it's so delicious. I mean, I've had Danishes before. I've had really good croissants before, but to have something this light and flaky and sweet and flavorful is a joy. And our friend Kevin Revelinsky, who contributes some stories, contributed not only a story about some of the more popular places to get a Kringle in Wisconsin, but a video as well. So if you head over to Up North News WI on our Facebook page, You can click over on the videos tab and take a look at, let's see, which bakery was it? I've got it down here. It's the one in Green Bay, Uncle Mike's. Yeah, there we go. Uncle Mike's Bake Shop. And there's some in Madison, Stoughton. But of course, you're going to get a fight if you try to make the claim that anything other than Racine is the Kringle capital of Wisconsin. And if you haven't done this, you'll probably see it somewhere in a bakery section someplace. You've always looked at it. Pick it up. You will not regret it. And I've actually started giving them out as Christmas presents as well. All right. More with Carolyn Fiddler after this. This is Up North News Radio.
And they called it puppy love. Oh, I guess they'll.
Oh, Aaron, God bless you. You know that Donny Osmond turns 65 years old today.
Wow.
Donny Osmond, Carolyn Fiddler, is a senior citizen today.
And why Honestly, I kind of thought he was older.
I guess that really wouldn't surprise me when you think about it. Are we sure about that? Now I got to double check that. Anyway, what I was going to say, Aaron, it was you, because he's older, and that's probably the only way you know him, you grabbed kind of a more recent version rather than the original one that charted. And sure enough, he is 65 years old today.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was more than one version of it. Honestly, it just says Puppy Love. It doesn't say like Puppy Love Remastered or anything like that.
Oh, okay. Well, you're forgiven. We'll maybe get to a little bit later on, because that was the thing. He was whenever that was a hit, he had such a high voice because, again, he was, you know, he was a teen idol back in the day. And you're not old enough to know the names of all the Osmond brothers, because it was always the Osmonds and there was the Jackson Five. There we go. There's our boy.
Oh, I guess they'll never know.
I can't believe we're talking about him being 65 years old now. Anyway, such is the way of the world. Mm-hmm. Let's see. This day in music history as well, 1972, Helen Reddy becomes the very first Australian to have a number one record in the U.S.
Wow.
I am woman, hear me roar in numbers too big to ignore. And I know.
I suppose is this the anthem it used to be? Or do you feel like, you know, there's a certain age cutoff where women just they don't even know that song anymore?
I think there's an age cutoff, but I think it's time to bring it back. Let's go.
I couldn't agree more. Yep. All right, let's go to 1978. The Blues Brothers released their first single. And if you know Sam and Dave, you'll know the song. Pardon me while I get ready to do a little dancing. Not that I don't look at all like Dan Aykroyd if you put me in a dark suit, but can I dance like him? No, not. But then again, he can't dance like him anymore. Again, if Donny Osmond's 65, none of us are getting any younger either.
Oh, that is very true.
On that same day in 1978, a group called Chic, this was the number one song that day in 78. Now, Carolyn, here's some trivia I didn't know about the song. It was Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards came up with the song after they were denied access to a party they'd been invited to.
Ooh, I would freak out.
They wanted to tell off the people who turned them away from the party. So Freak Out was not the original title of the song. The first word did begin with F, but it wasn't freak. And I'm sure that when CeeLo Green put out a song with that same title that you still can't say on the radio, I'm sure these guys thought, oh, well, I mean, we worked out with Freak Out, but again, now just imagine the song, how they originally wrote it, and you'll never hear it the same way again. All right. Let's see. I think most of the other history highlights. yeah, we mentioned that Dick Butkus is 80 years old today, and A Charlie Brown Christmas made its debut on this day in 1965. I still love A Charlie Brown Christmas so much. I mean, that's a big one for me. You have any favorites for Christmas that you never miss?
The Charlie Brown Christmas special is a big one. When I was a kid, I used to always wait for the Yogi Bear Christmas special to come on.
The Yogi Bear Christmas special?
Yes. It's at a ski resort, and they wake up Yogi from his hibernation, and like someone's trying to force the sale of the resort because it's fallen on hard times, and yeah. There's a geyser involved.
I think maybe I did see that. Wow, that goes back. Apparently, it didn't have much staying power, that much.
Which is regrettable. It's Yogi Bear, man. It's classic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right. Carolyn is Courier Newsroom's political editorial director here. And so here we are finally at the end of the midterms. And we were at the end of it talking about the win in Georgia giving Democrats 51 seats. But how did you describe Kyrsten Sinema's announcement today? Was she...
weren't paying attention to her for about 2 seconds, and she just had to change that.
Jeez. So if you missed it earlier, in the last hour, Kyrsten Sinema announced she's leaving the Democratic Party to be an independent. What do you suppose this means in the Senate?
Well, I think it means that she's been looking at her poll numbers among Democrats in Arizona and is either thinking this is the only way to save her skin or is thinking about the dumb unity ticket thing that some people are hatching nationally for 24, which is the dumbest idea.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I don't know.
I
can't pretend to know how she thinks, but I know that her, as of a few months ago at least, her poll numbers with the Democratic base in Arizona were not good.
Right. Well, is this unity thing some kind of a Lincoln Project thing, like from Never Trump Republicans?
No labels.
The
group that decided to rehab Halperin after he got fired for very credibly. Engaging in sexual misconduct with multiple women.
What has no labels ever accomplished it's just their way to throw rocks at both parties. Again, I always come back to, can you get some work done? And tell me if I'm wrong, but I think some people love to just throw rocks, but you have to actually forge that bipartisan compromise. You have to be that gang of four or whatever it is. And if Manchin and Sinema are half of a gang of four that gets things done in 2023, I'll be the first one to give them credit, but sure. Color me skeptical.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Yeah, I'm more concerned with who funds that group, because apparently they have a lot of money. But
yes.
There was a big piece in Politico this week about what a toxic workplace it is. And I'd heard that before. I know someone who used to work there, and, you know, and this was a white guy, and he's like, it was toxic as hell.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It's not just women or people of color. Everyone hates that place.
What does a political editorial director do now that the midterm cycle has passed us?
Well, I'm helping prep for our newsrooms in our eight states to cover, seven of the eight, to cover their state legislative sessions that all kick off in January, except for our eighth newsroom, Florida. Their sessions kicks off in March. So
you had me very concerned there for about 8 seconds when you said seven of the eight states. I'm like, what newsroom's getting whacked that I don't know about? No. Are you breaking some news?
No, absolutely not. No, thanks. It's been too long of a week for that.
Okay. Well, good. Well, I'm trying to do my part here with this fine little program to talk about the Wisconsin legislative session, especially, I don't know, is there any other state that has a $6 billion pile of money to work with?
Minnesota has a big surplus too, but we don't have a newsroom there. So,
okay. Well, we will watch that, and we will look forward to talking to you later about how all these various legislatures are or aren't getting stuff done, or if they're just throwing rocks. Carolyn Fiddler, have a great weekend. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks. Good to see you.
All right. See ya. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. An interview taped yesterday when we thought Democrats were going to have 51 seats. So just keep that in mind when we play that tape back and then throw the tape into the fireplace. We'll be back. This is Up North.